Hello and welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned into Press TV's News Analysis. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Marzi Hashimi. As revolutions have taken place in the region, the rumblings have been felt in many places, and it appears that the next epicenter could be Saudi Arabia. As more demonstrations have taken place in the kingdom, another protester has been killed in the eastern province. Also, reports say that a Saudi policeman has also been killed as the violence continues and claims of abuse and illegal incarceration rise. Many question what lies ahead in this repressive kingdom as the people continue to seek equality. Are we on the edge of a revolution in Saudi Arabia? Stay with us as we take a look at this on our news analysis.
Anti-regime protests in Saudi Arabia seem to have entered a new phase. The oil-rich eastern province has become the hotbed of a popular uprising against the Al Saud dynasty as protests gain momentum. Security forces have killed a teenage protester in the city of Qatif. The Saudi Interior Ministry says 18-year-old Hussein Youssef Al-Khalaf died of his wounds on the way to hospital. He was shot by Saudi security forces on Friday. The ministry claims Khalaf was among four people whom the regime forces were hunting down. The government says they had attacked a police patrol, killing one officer and wounding another. Witnesses say they were taking part in a protest there. The latest violence comes as Riyadh has strictly banned any anti-government rallies across the kingdom. Anti-regime protests have been harshly cracked down by the security forces. Saudi Arabia has come under fire from human rights organizations, including Amnesty International, over its dire human rights record. However, Riyadh's Western supporters, including the U.S., have remained largely silent on the issue. The escalating tensions in Saudi Arabia's eastern province raise questions about whether the kingdom is headed for an armed revolt against an authoritarian regime that shows zero tolerance toward dissent. The situation could also lead to a major disruption in world oil markets if the unrest that's taking place in the kingdom's oil hub begins to take its toll on Saudi Arabia's oil production.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from London, director of IGA, Mr. Ali Al-Ahmad. From Beirut, author of Shias of Saudi Arabia, Mr. Fuad Ibrahim. And from Washington, President of Society for International Reforms and Research, Sayed Ali Wasif. Thank you all for being with us on this news analysis. What I'd like to start off in London. Mr. Al-Ahmad, how serious is the situation really in Saudi Arabia right now, in your perspective?
It is very serious, obviously. That's why the Saudi government sent in enforcement from the National Guards into the eastern province in the past, last night and today, because the situation is rapidly getting out of control of the government. And this is only because the part of the population is protesting. Imagine if the region itself erupts in protest and civil disobedience. This will impact international energy market, the oil flow, because this is the heart of the largest oil source in the world. So this is a really a very serious situation, and the rest of the country is watching what takes place there and transpires in Qatif. And we will see more protests in those areas, especially in the capital, Riyadh, which has gathered momentum in the past few weeks and will be holding protests in the next, by the end of this month, because of the so-called National Solidarity Day on the end of this month in Ramadan.
Okay, well, Mr. Ibrahim, Mr. Al-Ahmad talked about the possible effect on the oil markets. Let's look at that. If this situation continues to deteriorate in Saudi Arabia and the demonstrations could grow, tell me in more specific terms the possible effects that it could have on oil markets in general.
Well, with the insistence of the Saudi regime to heavily deploy more security forces into the region, which will lead to the escalation of the security situation in the whole country. This will have a direct impact on the not only the oil market, but the world economy in general, because the Saudi authorities still insist that to use violence against peaceful protesters in Eastern Province. This policy seems to be the only option that the Saudi authorities tends to adopt. So I believe that the situation will deteriorate, and the Saudi authorities will bear responsibility for any negative or critical reactions, either on the local market and the international market.
Well, Said Wasif, your take on that. Now, we've seen that another demonstrator has been killed. How likely is this going to have an effect, sort of a rippling effect that usually we have seen in other countries, than when they wanted to bury that individual, that people would turn out in demonstrations? How likely, as the violence continue to increase in Saudi Arabia, that we're going to see major escalations of demonstrations and also, of course, reactions by the Saudi regime?
Well, in my view, the more killings.
This is for Said Wasif in Washington, please. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No problem.
Well, I think the important matter is not that the gentleman was killed there, a protester was killed, but the important news is a policeman was killed, if he was killed. If the policeman was killed, this is a sign of a direct head-on collision.
Why do you say that?
With the Saudi regime. That is, this, yeah, because it means that now the protesters are sick and tired of marching on the streets, taking to the streets day in and day out, and now they are ready to move ahead with a same force, with a similar force, with a similar kind of equal reaction to the Saudi brutality, that is, an eye for an eye. If this is exactly the case, then this is a doomsday scenario. So the Saudi authorities should now see and translate the writings on the wall, and those are somewhat a warning to the Saudi regime that enough is enough, and it's going to have an international repercussion as well. So I think what the demonstrators and the protesters have done now, they are now gradually moving towards an organized protest, an organized demonstration, an organized kind of a strategy which they lacked before. So whatever they are doing now, I think they are under a single leadership, under a single banner, and they are moving ahead in the right direction to oust the Saudi regime from that region, especially from that region. But they should take into confidence all other groups. Those are from other parts of Saudi Arabia who have a kind of exile presence in Europe or in other parts of the world, in North America. They should contact them as well in order to boost up the morale of the Saudi dissidents and those who hate the Saudi regime and their brutality. I think they should form a single forum to oust this regime.
Okay, well, what about that, Mr. Al-Ahmad? Can the protesters, as our guest in Washington has said, that perhaps we're entering a new phase and meeting each other head on, would they be able to deal with the Saudi regime which can come down extremely brutal on protests? How do you see this carrying itself out? Because if it has taken this turn, and now the demonstrators have basically reacted to the repression and a police person has died, how do you see this affecting the whole scenario?
Well, I think there was several stages of turning points. One of them is the arrest of Sheikh Namr al-Namr a few weeks ago. That made the conflict between the protesters, between the people and the regime, take on a new stage, a new level. And this incident, we are not completely sure of the circumstances. The government might be staging this incident to legitimize the use of force and to frame this protest movement into a violent movement. So let's not be hasty and think that or believe the government accusation or claims that a policeman have been killed. There is a massive the teenage boy who was killed in the street was not around or close by where the government says the policeman was killed, and he has no relationship to the event that might have transpired. And the young teenage boy who was killed in cold blood was not armed. So, and he was shot without any provocation or warning. So,
well, do you think we're going to see more reactions from, let's look at this teenager who has been killed. You said killed in cold blood. How likely then are we going to see now a reaction from those people who are demonstrating in that area that a young man has been killed, as you said, unarmed? And do you think that we will see this wave of reaction now that they have killed one person, then more protesters will go out on the street demonstrating about that death, and it sort of continues? How likely is that scenario likely to take place?
I think it is very likely. This is not the first teenager who has been killed. We are talking about this is the number 12. Young man who has been killed. And so every time a young man is killed, more protesters come out to the street. We see the size of the protest is getting larger, as if the blood of these young boys is feeding this tree of revolution, and it's increasing. If you take the first martyr who was killed last year and measure it to now, you see that the protest movement in the country, not only in the Eastern Province, has increased and has taken on a different shape.
Okay. So we are really seeing. I want to look at that point that you've just made with Mr. Ibrahim. What Mr. Al-Ahmed just said, that you see the protest movement taking on a different shape and more people turning out, are we reaching the point of no return, meaning that when the abuse becomes so much and it's so repressive, when the demonstrators or protesters decide that they will take whatever risk, but that there has to be a change in the country, have we reached that point as we see more and more people taking to the streets and also spreading to different cities? Do you think that we've reached that point that there's determination on the demonstrators now, by all costs, whatever it takes, they want a change?
Well, I believe that with the recourse to violence, the state has determined, the Saudi state has determined to fuel more protest in the region. I believe that with the killing of 13 martyrs until now, the protesters decided and are determined to continue their protest. There is no return as long as the state uses violence against peaceful protesters. There is no return because there is a legitimate demand for those people who are in the streets now. So if the Saudi authorities want to reach an agreement, then there is only one solution, is to bring about a deep and essential reform to the country. With the killing, with more blood and shedding in the street, there is no solution except to listen and to bring about deep and profound reform to this country.
Okay, well said, Wasif, what about that? We see this time and time again, especially with these dictatorial regimes in the Middle East, starting off from Tunisia and then Egypt and continuing. Why hasn't the Saudi regime learned from so many of the others that have fallen? Why haven't they tried to bring about some type of changes? We know that King Abdullah, initially after the Egyptian and Tunisian revolution, tried to put some money in certain parts of the society, certain sectors of the society, But why not try to implement reforms?
I think
it has three reasons. First of all, you have to look at the infrastructure of the Saudi government, its historical background, and its ideology. If you understand these three factors, you'll be able to understand why, as to why is the Saudi regime unable to understand the language on the wall, the writing on the wall, and it's unable to translate the writings on the wall. Because first, Saudi regime is an amalgamation of a vicious circle of some court mullahs and the royal family, first, a vicious circle. And they join hand in hand, they are hand in hand in every kind of corruption and backing each other on different occasions, first in the name of Islam, first. So what they are doing is they are betraying the common Muslims in the name of Mecca and Medina and their sacredness. The sacredness of Mecca and Medina is being used by the Saudi regime to fool around, to fool the Saudi citizens and to fool the Muslim Ummah and the international community at large. So this is the first problem. The second is, as compared to other Middle Eastern regimes, Saudi Arabia is the richest among all of them. So it takes advantage of its oil resources and spend a lot of money to propagate its policies and to buy and purchase some kind of dissidents and mullahs and people from different strata within the Saudi regime and outside of the Saudi regime as well. So the third is they are so brutal, and the Saudi intelligence and the Ministry of Interior is so brutal that as soon as they smell a kind of a dissident characteristic within a family, they just pick up those family members, and the family members have vanished. So this is the type of repression they are engaged in. So how would you expect a different scenario on the streets, different from, for instance, from Egypt and from Tunisia, mm-hmm. And Yemen and so on? So this is the case. Therefore, I think the solution is, I think, a kind of a unified opposition, both from the Eastern province and from other parts of Saudi Arabia, with a single point agenda.
Okay, I'm going to get back to you for the solution a little bit later in this program. But Mr. Al-Ahmed, let's look at the situation with the Saudi regime in general. Now, we have seen the Saudi regime lately interfering in so many different countries' affairs, from Yemen to Bahrain and Syria. Why have we seen, it appears, a more aggressive foreign policy involving Saudi Arabia into various countries' affairs?
Well, the Saudis are trying to do two things. Number one, they're trying to prevent the spillover of the popular revolution in the Arab countries from coming to their capital, from unseating them. So they are trying really to do what we can call to prepare or to preempt any spillover from the Egyptian and other revolutions. Secondly, they are doing that in cooperation with and in favor of Western powers, especially the United States, which is looking for somebody to play a role to maintain its interest in other countries from Syria and Egypt and Tunisia and so on. So they are really doing themselves a great service by getting involved. It's not because they really worry about democracy or they want to maintain the rights of the Arab people in those countries. In fact, Saudi Arabia is trying to thwart any chance of success of the Arab Spring, an Arab Spring that will bring upon an elected government that represent the people and to maintain the independence and sovereignty of those nations.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ibrahim, though, how likely is it, though, to backfire on them? We see with this brutal crackdown that they are involved, the Saudi regime is involved in Bahrain, but in return, that has actually spread in many ways to inside of the country. We've seen many demonstrations reacting to the harsh crackdown that is taking place in Bahrain. How likely is this to backfire on them, being involved in all these other countries and trying to, in some cases, change the governments and in some cases, making sure that a repressive government stays in place?
Well, certainly the Saudi regimes are not opted for a democratic option in any Arab countries. That's why they support the repressive regimes in Bahrain and Yemen, and even in Syria, they are not aimed to bring down Bashar al-Assad to replace it with a democratic regime. In fact, they have their own agenda, and they are not planning to encourage democracy in any part of the Middle East. Actually, they have led the anti-revolution since the beginning of the so-called Arab Spring. So I think they will continue their their repressive policies against revolutions, against democratic pro-democracy movements in the Middle East, and they will do the best they can to abort any democratic transition in any part of the Middle East.
All right, Said Wasif, you were talking about possible solutions. Let's hear them. What will it take now to ease the pressure on the people in Saudi Arabia? What is the answer?
Well, the answer is simple. And there are two parts of this answer. One is based on international legal norms, and the other is based on Islamic norms. First, the international legal norms. Monarchy is basically a disgrace on the face of a nation under international law, under international human rights law. Monarchy is not allowed. Saudi regime is totally in contravention with international legal norms, international human rights norms, first. The second is the Islamic concept. Saudi regime, it doesn't even follow the basic Muslim Islamic tenets, the basic Quranic tenets of shurahum amre bainahum, that is to have a kind of consultative status or in the regime.
Okay.
You have just the princes, 5,000 princes and the royal family members there making the policies to their own ends first. So the answer
Said
to this is...
Said 15 seconds. Sorry, almost out of time. 15
unified,
seconds.
A unified opposition is the answer. And that should have their offices in Washington, D.C. and in European capitals to muster international support to oust this
All right.
region.
I'm so sorry I have to interrupt you. Hopefully we can do another program on the situation in Saudi Arabia, but I'd like to thank our guests for this program. From London, Mr. Ali Al-Ahmed, the director of IGA. From Beirut, author of Shias of Saudi Arabia, Mr. Fuad Ibrahim. And from Washington, president of the Society for International Reforms and Research, Said Ali Wasif. And viewers, thank you always for joining us right here on Press TV's News Analysis. Join us right here, same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew here in Tehran. Thank you and goodbye.